Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 24th, 2012. You're listening to the best poker cast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Scott, I got to interrupt you real quick because I know you're going to go off into some tangent. But last night I had a dream. I was playing Hold'em. And on the river, I needed a jack or a deuce to win the hand. And you'll never guess what the card was.
The three of clubs.
No, it was half a jack and half a deuce.
That is awesome.
They turned the card, and there was like a slash diagonally across the card, and there was half of a jack and half of a deuce on one card. And everybody was like, whoa, what does that mean? And I'm like, I don't know what that means, but I need a jack or a deuce, and I got half of each, so I think I win. And then they're like, you don't win. There's no such thing as a jack or a deuce. And I'm like, what the hell is this? So how did I get this card? And then I woke up. So I'm just wondering, did you take any psych classes in college? Is there anything that you can help me?
No, but I do think that's part of the new J Design Wild Tallahassee Poker card set that's coming out.
I mean, I have no idea. I guess, like, I just don't like to lose, so I want to make sure my dream makes sure that I win by ensuring that I get both cards that I need. I don't know, but I got the jack and the deuce all in one card. It was a cool-looking card, too.
So, I mean, if that's your one time, it probably counts as two, right?
Or two half-times. I don't know.
Two half-times?
Yeah, which is still one time. I don't know, but that was really a weird dream. And we were arguing. People were yelling, and I'm like, but I got what I needed. They're like, no, you didn't. You got a jack and a deuce half. You don't. What's your hand then? And I'm like, I don't know.
I think you need to send that to Jody for call the floor. See how he would rule on that.
Oh, man.
Oh my God. But while you're out sleeping, I'm out working for the Ante Up Nation.
Yeah, I'm sure. At 3 in the morning, you were working.
Well, it almost got to that point. Trust me. Get ready for this great Ante Up Poker Cruise that leaves next week with 221 wonderful passengers coming. Very, very much looking forward to it. Of course, we got this little small weather event, as those here in Florida like to call it. You know, people anywhere else in the country are like, oh my gosh! Armageddon is in the ocean! Down here, just a few sprinkles. But, you know, I got to get over to the copy shop to get you know, our brochures printed, right? For the passengers, we give them out with all their information that they need to know to thoroughly enjoy their cruise.
Right.
And, of course, there's an unidentified copy shop because, you know, you never know. They might be a sponsor someday. But I couldn't imagine because I was taking phone calls left and right all day from people going, hey, is the cruise canceled? Hey, is the cruise canceled? That storm looks bad. Is the cruise canceled? No, it's not canceled. Safest place to be in a hurricane's on a ship. And little did I know that it was the copy shop that was probably going to imperil our cruise. All I need to do is get these brochures printed. It usually takes them about 20 minutes, right? So I show up. Starts off well. I give the little file to the little very cute worker, and she's like, wow, Ante Up Poker Cruise, do you own that? And I'm like, huh, yeah, I do. And she's like, that's so cool. I'm like, yeah, it is, kind of. And I'm like, you know, where could this girl be when I was in high school when I needed to impress girls?
Yeah.
Now I'm a happily married man. I don't care if anybody likes me. But now I've got power. But it quickly went downhill after that. The little trifold machine broke.
Oh, man.
So they had no less than 4 employees all over trying to work on it for about an hour.
Instead of just folding the copies themselves.
Well, yeah, because they charge you more to hand fold it. So at this point, I was getting a little agitated. They're like, hey, do you want to take these somewhere else to get them folded? And I'm like, not particularly. And so they showed me, and it was like a slight sliver off. And these guys were going for the perfection score of the world on trifolding. And I'm like, dude, we're on a cruise ship. Half of these are going to get wet. It doesn't really matter. But I'm like, you know, hey, well, I guess I'll accept it, but you're going to have to take off the trifolding charge. I'm not paying for it. Oh, okay, that's fine. I'm like, score, right? And the guy's like, man, you've been really patient, man. I'm going to give you, like, 10 free copies, too. I'm like, not that I need that, but I'm like, all right, fine. Hey, I appreciate that. The printer broke, Chris.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, that's all right. I don't need the copies. I'm not going to sit here for another hour while you figure out the printer. I'm like, okay, sorry, sir. Check out. It's X amount of money. Give it to him. Oh, man. I'm sorry. Our credit card machine is down now.
Are you serious?
I'm not making a single word of this story up, including you know, the cute little girl flirting with him. So they had to pull out that, you know, I know you've probably seen it on black and white TV shows, but they pull out that big machine where you have to put the card in there and they go whoosh, whoosh.
Yeah.
And in Britain, they had to do that. When's the last time you've seen that?
Not very often.
But anyhow, so I spent 7 hours last night at the copy shop, but full steam ahead for the cruise this weekend. We've got a lot of good stuff about next year's cruise later on in the show. But, you know, we were talking last week about watching TV, poker on TV, right? And, of course, I said I'm not very excited about watching actual poker on TV. But I was flipping channels, you know, looking for see what channel Armageddon or Die Hard are on, you know, since that's what I watch every day, right? And I stop on a episode of Charlie's Angels. You remember the series, right?
Of course.
Jacqueline Smith, Farrah Fawcett. And I'm like, wow, I haven't seen one of those in forever. So, you know, I'll click on it because, you know, I don't know how your TV is, but mine is, you know, it keeps a little picture-in-picture while you're searching for something else.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, you know, I'd rather watch Farrah Fawcett drive around in a car than I would SpongeBob SquarePants, right? So I click on it, and I go back to the guide, and I realize that Chris, which is Cheryl Ladd's character, is walking into a place called Deuce's Poker Parlor, Chris.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, all right, my search is over. I'm going to have to stop and watch this. So it's like, I assume this is out in California. It's been 30 years since I watched Charlie's Angels. But she walks in, and it looks like one of those great self-deal club California card clubs. You know, you have the little fake ficus tree in the corners, and the little dogs playing poker paintings up there, the little round tables. And people are there, they're all dressed to the nines, and having their little scotches and their cigars, and they're self-dealing, you know, like it was. It was like a slice of history there, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure California was, split.
Yeah, exactly, except no one was throwing oranges on escalators, but... And, of course, you know, I know what poker's on TV now is completely ridiculously not true, right? So I'm sure that back in... This is 1981 that this episode was on. I'm sure the clubs didn't look anything like this either. But it was probably close enough, right?
Yeah.
Close enough to be impressed, right? So I started watching. I'm like, oh, I got to see what the storyline is now, right? So so Chris is there. She's sipping on her little vodka and tonic or whatever. Keeps looking over at this guy at the table. And every once in a while, he gets his cards, and then he'll kind of look around. You know, really conspicuously. And then he'll look down to his wrist, and he would start typing on. He has one of those, you know, those calculator watches?
Yes.
And I'm like, not like the little small ones. I mean, like the ones that had, like, the complete Casio, like, just protruding from your wrist. That was, like, all the rage back in the 80s. And he's typing into that. And then, so she's looking at that. So eventually he comes over to buy her a drink, because, you know, of course, Why would you not buy Cheryl Ladd a drink, right?
Right.
And she's like, hey, I noticed, couldn't help but noticing your watch there. And he's like, yeah, it helps me keep track of the cards.
Oh, man.
All right, so we've been doing this show for what? 17 years now?
Yeah, about that.
Did I miss the show where we talk about counting cards and poker?
That's the show after we get back from the cruise. I was going to surprise you with that topic, but yes, there is a show planned for that. Did the guy also calculate the odds that Cheryl Ladd would actually be interested in him? Because I'm sure that his computer...
Well, yeah, she was totally interested in him. Of course, it's all a ruse, though, because he ended up being a money launderer, right?
Yeah,
of course, she fell for him, and then, you know, Bosley had, like, you know, set her straight. You know, hey, there's no love in this! But I guess I've been waiting all week to talk about this, and I can't think of a good example of where counting cards in poker helps you.
Well, I wonder.
If you don't have exposed cards. I mean, I don't know what game they're playing. They didn't play too much. I guess it was studs. I guess you have exposed cards. Maybe that helps a little bit. But you still have unexposed cards of people in hand, so just. I'll be interested from the nation whether there's any way that clown cards would actually help. Now, of course, you know, then they went to Vegas. And he's at the blackjack table, and they had to come over and tell him that his play was no longer welcome in that casino, but he had a free comp room, which is nice. You know, hey, you just cheated us from $400,000, but, you know, stay in the Emperor Suite.
Was Elliot Gould and George Segal in this episode by any chance?
No, but it had one of those great things where the card room operator was also watching the guy.
Uh-huh.
And this is back at Deuce's Poker Parlor right now, Vegas.
Right.
And, came over to him and accused him of cheating. And cheating the club. Like, he's stealing from the club. So, of course, he and his little idiot son jump in the car and chase these guys all the way to Vegas, shooting them and stuff, trying to get his money back that it was stolen.
Hey, remember Cincinnati Kid, your other favorite poker movie? You know, the guy has the charts and everything. Remember when he's, like, researching the hands and whether or not he should play this hand and whether or not he should make a call and everything? And, you know, he's got the stats there for the probabilities and stuff. Maybe this guy has figured out how to use his watch to calculate probabilities of the cards that have come out or counting the cards' values. I don't know. But, oh, my God, pretty sad. Absolutely sad.
Crazy. Crazy.
Well, again,
like, you watch the TV too.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we go in these spurts where we don't mention television and poker ever, and then all of a sudden now it's like three or four of our topics today are going to be about this. But there was a showing of Rounders on FX this week. And
I'm going to stop you here because I think this is a guy thing, right? Because it's a little known fact, probably not too many people on the show know, but you like the movie Rounders.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned it once or twice.
You've watched it probably 27,000 times. I'm sure you have it on DVD, Blu-ray, cassette tape, in any form that Rounders is at, you have it, right?
Once a year, I pay Ed Norton to come and reenact the scene when he's in the basketball court.
Excellent.
Yeah, he comes
very
to my house and throws the basketball with me. And
so my wife gets upset when I stop on a movie that's on TV and rewatch it. But I can imagine, I don't have a lot of big DVD collection, so isn't it weird that you stop on a show that you have a DVD of and pick it up in the middle of the show? But it's not weird because guys do this all the time, right?
Yeah, I mean, here, I always look at it like this. When you're listening to music and you don't listen to a brand new song every time you listen to music, you listen to stuff you like. You like the drums of it, or you like the female singer's voice, or you like the lyrics, or you like the guitar riffs. So there are particular things that you listen to the song for because you like it and you listen to it again. Same thing with the movie. You know, you like particular moments in the movie. You like the way the dialogue is, or you like the way somebody looks, or you like the hands that are being played, or whatever it is within that movie. You like those scenes just like you like a song. So to me, I don't think there's anything wrong. I've literally watched MASH episodes, every single one of them, probably 600 times each in my life. From, you know, taping with my DVR and falling asleep to it at night to just growing up as a kid and watching it four or five times a day in syndication. And it's just because they're entertaining, just like a song is entertaining. Yeah, it's a half an hour long or 2 hours long when it's a movie or something, but it's still the same kind of thing. So I don't know why guys do it more than women, because they do. My wife says the same thing to me. How can you watch this for the blah, blah, blah time, whatever? And I'm like, hey, you know, how do you listen to a song for the 7,000th time? You know, okay, it's only over 5 minutes. It doesn't matter. You know, it's still entertaining.
That's a good point. I'm going to use that on the wife.
Yeah. I mean, I may not be watching the movie. I may be answering emails or playing a game or talking to my wife or playing poker online when I was, you know, when we had that and stuff, while I had the thing in the background or something. But, you know, it's entertaining, and it's, you know, I don't know. But I was starting to watch it, and one of my favorite things to do now is to, whenever I'm watching something on TV, is to have the IMDb app open on my iPad or my phone or whatever and just kind of like read about whatever it is I'm watching. Sometimes there's insider stuff that I didn't know about or cool little, you know, trivia tidbits or something. So when Gretchen Mol came on the screen, whenever I see her now, I always think, oh, that's Scott's girl.
You know, that's Gretchen.
Yeah, that's the girl that Scott would rather be with instead of Famke Janssen. And I'm like,
not even close.
So I'm like, I always thought I would pick Famke Janssen. She's into poker. I like dark hair, and you know, so I thought, and she was kind of cool, you know, being wired in and a poker person. The other one, all she did was bitch at him and yell at him and whatever and leave him. So I always thought, you know, it's got to be Famke. It can't be Gretchen. But you were always on Gretchen. So I said, all right, let me go on IMDb and see if there's any tidbits that I need to know about these two women. And
of course, you did this with the full permission of your wife, correct?
Oh yeah, no, IMDb is just IMDb.
Hey, honey, I'm gonna research these two hot women.
Well, the show itself.
It's IMDb though, so you know.
Listen to this. I think that you may have been onto something here. Gretchen Mol, believe it or not, is from Deep River, Connecticut, which is exactly the coverage area that I used to cover for the Middletown Press when I was sports editor there. And I used to go down to Deep River and cover their football team and their basketball teams or whatever they had going at the time. And I think I used to – she might even actually have been in school when I was working there. I can't be certain because she left to go to New York to study acting in her teen years. But she very well could have read something I had written about her school or something. So I had no idea that she was from my area. What?
We're eternally grateful for that career choice. Now, let me ask you, how deep is the river in Deep River?
It's deep, and they call it the valley. The school is like Valley something, Regional Tech or something like that, because you drive for miles and miles and miles down this hill to get there.
So you guys are highly creative there up in the Nutmegger State there.
Yeah.
When you're going to name stuff, you just kind of look around and point.
Yeah, and of course, where I worked was Middletown. you know what I mean? They called it Middletown for a reason. It was the middle town of Connecticut. And it's actually, when you go from Middletown to Deep River, you're taking the road that you would take to go to Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun.
And they probably call it Road, right?
Yeah. That's where a school's located, on Road. So get this. It says, Gretchen Mol worked with her husband's ex-wife, Famke Janssen, on three films. Two before she married him, Rounders and Celebrity, and one after she married him, The Ten. So this guy, Todd Williams, it turns out, ultimately picked Gretchen Mol over Famke Janssen. And he has insider knowledge, clearly, on who the better of the two needed to be if he divorces one and picks the other. So it could be interpreted that way, or it could be that Famke dumped him and then he went to the next best thing and got Gretchen Mol. I don't know. But, I mean, how weird is that this Todd Williams experienced both women?
That is...
And ended up with Gretchen Mol.
Hmm.
So maybe you win. I don't know. Or maybe you lose because Famke dumped him. I don't know.
Is he still married to Fashion Gretchen?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe they have two kids. They just had one recently.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah, she just did have a kid. I was going to say, you know, if they weren't together, then we totally got to get him on the show. And Grillo, but obviously we can't if he's still with one. You know, it's not going to tell us one or the other. But
that was pretty bizarre. Bizarre. He married her and then was married to Famke. That's wild to me. But I watched it for the 876th time this week on FX. So you can never get too much with the Rounders, you know. I like when they dub it, you know, if they say a word and they're not supposed to say it, and they substitute spit for another word that sounds just like it. And I'm like, oh my God, it's FX. Just let them say it.
Oh, you know, but that's the best part of watching these classic movies is on regular TV.
See what they come up with?
Because they end up cutting it, and of course you know it because you're a nerd because you've seen the movie 4,000 times. So I'm like, hey, wait, what about that scene? And then they change the words, and you're like, that's awesome.
It's so funny because half the time the guy is still talking and his mouth's not even moving, but the swear that he was covering up was...
Yeah.
Shorter than the curse that they came up with to replace it, and yeah, it's kind of sad. But yeah, I enjoyed it because it's high def too. You get to watch it in high def, and kind of cool.
Excellent. All right, well, our hotline has been busy. We're getting backed up on calls, but I had to get this one to the top of the queue here because it's our all TV show here, apparently.
Yeah.
Call us at 813-448-1120, and we might put your clip on the show like we are today from our good friend Paul from South Carolina.
Just listening to your show about the World Series of Poker main event live coverage, or not live coverage, but coverage on ESPN, and I'm hearing comments like, I don't watch it anymore. I might not get through it. Hey, you guys are running a poker show. You're supposed to be excited about it. You gotta keep me excited about it. I'm dying for poker. I have no poker. Anyway, take care. Bye.
Now, all right. I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. We're supposed to talk about what's happening, and to me, what was happening was that it wasn't that good. I don't know. What do you think?
Here's kind of the problem is that that you came out and you're like, Scott, you hate poker on TV. And I'm like, whoa, come on. That's probably a little too much. But, you know, here's the thing for me. I obviously don't hate poker on TV. We actually produce TV stuff, and that's fun. And I used to like it. But for me, I'm just kind of bored with seeing the same stuff.
Yeah.
All the time. And, you know, I guess I just want to kind of see something different. I mean, and there's something wrong with just an hour of straight, unadulterated poker action. There's lots of people out there that love that. I mean, to me, I compare it to kind of the folks on the forum or fans of the show that, like, dude, all we want is hand analysis, hand stuff, man. And you put that on the forum, and they just go bat crazy over it, and they love it. That's great. I never get very excited about that. Mm. I would get excited about something else. So, I don't know. I'm just looking for something different out of TV, and not some of the gimmicky stuff. Like, I can't remember some of these gimmicky shows, like the, you know, where they put you
hip-hop,
like,
hold'em.
Well, not even so much that, but I don't know. I mean, some of those Poker Star shows or Full Tilt shows where they had some kind of twist with, like, the hot buttoners. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
That wasn't enough for me. I mean, I think it has to be something that's just totally fresh and different. And in terms of inspiring people, though, I mean, you brought this up. I mean, the first boom of poker is over. We're not going to get those people back interested in poker by running the same stuff on TV. I mean, we've ran through the Celebrity Poker Showdown, the Hip Hop Hold'em, the Poker on the Speed Channel. We're not going to get those people back with that same stuff. We got to get them back with something different. And I don't know what that is right now. I mean, obviously, I got thousands of ideas because I always do.
What I think is funny, though, is about 8-10 minutes ago, we were just talking about how guys love to watch the same thing over and over again, and yet you don't like to do that with poker.
Well, see, no, but that's the same thing with poker you're talking about. I mean, I guess I would watch the same poker episode.
Yeah, over. Yeah.
Because that would be cool, because, like, oh, now I know what's going to happen here. Now I can watch his face, and that's interesting at that point, I think, but I don't think watching a World Poker Tour, a new episode of World Poker Tour this week, and then a new episode of the World Series of Poker this week is essentially the same thing.
Well, I'm still watching it. I mean, I do have sort of allegiance to the poker world when I'm, you know, choosing something to watch at night, and I will go through the channels, and if it's on and it's new, I will try to watch it just to keep up with things that are going on and current and stuff. But you're right. I mean, the other thing I wanted to mention, too, is, you know, I talked about, it was probably last week, about how they're starting with day three, and that was different. And Dave Bloomberg emailed me, and he's like, hey, you know, they started with day three last year, too. But what I thought was different was the reason why I thought they started with day three last year was because they'd had so much of the live coverage.
Right.
Whereas this year, I thought since they didn't have any live coverage, they would go back to day one. And he was saying, we went back and forth a few times. He talked about how, you know, it's very, with considering the size of the fields, how difficult it would be for them to actually capture an interesting storyline from day one or day two. And I said, well, you know, granted, I agree with that to a point. But remember, when there was still a field of almost 900, they saw Chris Moneymaker, and Norman Chad called him dead money, and then he won the whole thing, and they had gone back and said, look at this, we called him dead money, and he won the whole title. So there's always that chance. And I told him, what always made me laugh and interested was all the kooky people and people dressed up, you know, funny, some of the fun stuff. They don't get to do any of that when they go to day three. So I don't know. I just felt like they probably should have gone back to days one and two when they weren't doing live coverage just so we could see everybody who gets a chance to be on TV. You know, that's the beauty of it.
At least one episode, yeah, yeah. All the crazy stuff. But then, I guess, I mean, that probably goes back to the point you were just talking about. There's probably quite a few viewers out there that are disgusted by that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Say, come on, just show me poker. I don't want to see the guy dressed up like a chimp. Who cares?
And he did say that I'm probably the perfect example of why they didn't do live poker, because last year I watched the live and didn't watch the tape stuff, and their ratings probably suffered from it. And so it could be. And plus, I'm sure the
you're
cost.
You're to blame.
I'm the reason. The cost too, though. I'm sure the cost was something.
All right, Paul. We appreciate you calling the hotline. We are going to send you a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right in them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Or ask about the Anti-Up logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping. And remember to call our hotline again at 813-448-1120, and we'll put your very interesting call on a future show.
All right, our mailbag comes from Button Girl, who lives in Wales. And I think I saw her on the telly during the Olympics.
On the telly?
Yeah, I think she was watching the diving or something. I think she might have been in the stadium there. I'm not sure.
Diving were tough tickets again. Apparently, it's an interesting sport, according to my wife.
Yeah,
it's just you're jumping in the water.
At least that is a sport, I think. I think that.
Oh, well, that's true.
It's kind of a sport. They give you scores and stuff. Although they're still judged, so I don't know.
No ribbons or balls.
Don't get me started. That's what I want. I want somebody to throw a ball in the air, then dive and catch it before they hit the water. That's the new sport.
Essentially, what seals would be.
Yeah, exactly. And seals would be, you know, the best seals from America versus the best seals. She says, all right, I'm playing a lot of Omaha online. Oh, lucky you.
Obvious brag.
Yeah. As they hardly deal in my local casinos. I read Jeff Huang's excellent book and started making money almost right away, playing far tighter than I do in Hold'em, and remembering Chris's immortal line, yes, I am immortal now. It's a game of the nuts. So far, so good, she says, but however, I find that I spend hours building up my stack only to lose it consistently on the under full house. This has now happened to me 5 times in the few months I've been playing, about once a week, and I need to know where I'm going wrong. Can you tell me if there's something more I can do to avoid this situation? Am I making a basic error? By the way, my boyfriend Simon, very popular name over there, went into the hospital yesterday. All he took was 10-pound note for emergencies, his wash bag, and his MP3 player loaded with Annie Up podcasts. He's been catching up on them for a year, and now he has 3 whole weeks with nothing to do but lie there and get current. Some guys have all the luck. I'm sure that if they wanted to, they could listen to some of Scott's stories instead of using anesthesia. So
that would probably work.
Put him
to sleep. I do have somebody coming on the next cruise that uses us to fall asleep. She reminds me of it every time she calls.
Wake up! You will send great sums of cash to Chris and Scott at Annie Up.
Well, first of all, I'm going to say here, the dude's going to hospital. Some guys have all the luck. I'm going to venture that probably she's got a little bit of the luck here, right? For
I think she's using the subtle 101 from the School of Scott, subtle humor, but I don't know. Apparently, you didn't get that. I don't know. Well, I know what I told her. Every time whenever I respond to these and I see them on the show, I always think, we already had this on the show. But no, I had emailed her about this. I wanted to let her know that there was a very interesting chapter in Super System 2 by Lyle Berman about small stakes PLO and the under full. He does mention the under full in there, and I told her that, and she said I think she went and looked at it and read it already, so hopefully that helps her. I don't really recall exactly what he said. It's just that's something to always be careful of. I don't know how, you know, I don't think there was any sort of edict in there for how to avoid it, but to be careful of it. I don't really remember the exact wording.
Well, I think for new players, which she is, and obviously she's read the best books on the planet about Omaha, so she's more experienced at it, even though she hasn't played, But I think that's one of the things when people switch to Omaha is the underfold is really a big, huge trap. It's probably the biggest trap, I would think, other than not playing for the nuts in an Omaha 8, but we're talking PLO here. And the problem is, again, I think people get excited about hand ranks and forget about what might win.
Mm.
You know, again, I think we talked about this before, too. You get a straight flush, and they're like, oh, my gosh, that's unbeatable. Well, if the game is a weird game with, like, 9 cards and 40 wild cards, doesn't matter whether the straight flush is there, you know, if somebody else can have something better. So in Omaha, full houses win a lot in this game, and it's also because of how you use your cards that that underfull, a lot of times I don't want to, if I have a two pair on the flop with a straight, I don't always want to get improve, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to hit that full house if it's an underfull, because that means somebody probably just beat me, even though my hand improved. So then I think people kind of get it stuck in their mind, hey, I've got a full house now. Full house is almost unbeatable. And in this game, it almost is very. I'm trying to remember how many times that I could think of where an under full house, I won with an under full house. It doesn't happen very often.
Well, you can't win with an under full, because for it to be an under full, someone else has to have the over full, right? I mean, you could have any full house.
Well, I'm talking about a smaller full then, you know, when you have three of the smaller rank with two that are on the board. So let's say there's like two queens on the board and a six.
Right.
And you've got two sixes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, somebody else has a queen and one of the other cards, they got you beat. That's what I'm talking about. It doesn't matter whether they actually, you know, have it at that point or not, too. But you got to tread carefully when your boat isn't there. Now, that's probably not the great example, because you got a set there versus, usually it happens when you have, you know, a third card. Like, there's two sixes on the board and you have one in your hand. I guess my advice to her is just to tread carefully with it. Don't get as excited about getting it.
I remember it was a couple years ago, probably against Doc Frank. I had the overfull against him. It was something like 6, 7, 8 was on the board, and then it went 7, and I had 7, 8, and he had 7, 6 in his hand. So obviously it was the K7, and we kept going back and forth raising, and I ended up having the better hand than him, and he was like, God. And, you know, that was a good case of the underfull. That's when you get the most. I guess, is it also considered an underfull if the board is ace, king, 4, 3, 4, and you have pocket kings and they have pocket aces, and you're considered the underfull, or is it only when it's you're sharing the cards?
Well, I mean, obviously that's a smaller full.
Smaller full, but not an underfull.
I'm so worried about that as I am about, you know, the other.
Yeah, the underfull is when you're sharing the cards on the...
You know,
the paired board and everything. But
so, I mean, in that example, I mean, it's a hand I don't get into raising necessarily with this. Obviously, everything's situational, but for the most part, I mean, I'm not excited about raising or re-raising people. Oh, I've got a boat! And, you know, I want to be sure that I've got the best boat when I'm getting into a raising war. Otherwise, I'm just call. And I'll be happy to take it down if I'm, you know, maybe you give up a little bit of value, but my suspicion here is that that she's playing these all pretty tough.
Yeah.
And they're catching up to her rather than just, you know, missing out on value from time to time. So
I never get excited about two pair in Omaha. So if I'm not getting excited about the two pair, then when I fill up with those two pair, I'm still not that excited, because most of the time it's creating an underfull situation for you.
Two pair is like the lifeboat on the Antioch Poker Cruise. I'm glad it's there. If I have to need it, I will be happy to take it. But I'm not going to say, hey, Captain, no, I'm going to... you take the Lido deck yourself. I'm going to go out and paddle around this dinghy.
So I don't know what the advice is other than to be cautious with it.
Just be cautious.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And don't get too invested on two pair that turn into a full house.
All right, Button Girl, we always appreciate when you email in. It's been a while since we sent you something, so we're going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. Don't have to be a winner and enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
All right, Call the Floor comes from Rich Santoro, who is very active on the forum at andyatmagazine.com.
Love active forum. People on the forum.
And he said he was playing 1-2 no limit at a Chicagoland casino. The hand was folded to the cutoff, but the button acted out of turn and raised to $8. The dealer caught this, held the action, and told the cutoff that the decision was on him. The cutoff said, well, it looks like it's $8, and placed $8 in the pot. The button thought for a moment, then pulled his chips back and mucked his cards. The cutoff was surprised and asked what he was doing. The button said, I was only raising because I thought I was the first in. The action ahead of me changed, so I can change my decision. The dealer told the button that he could change his action, but any chips placed in the pot have to stay there, and he had to put his $8 back in the pot. Was that the correct decision?
There's what Jody says. TDA rule number 35, action out of turn, addresses this situation for tournaments. In a tournament, the player on the button would have been totally correct in this situation, and the dealer would have been mistaken by making that player leave the chips in the pot. The question is, does this room enforce TDA rule number 35 in cash games? If yes, we know the answer to your question. If no, or if the rule is partially followed for this situation, the dealer may have been correct as well, or both the button player and the dealer may have been mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right to me.
No real help.
Yeah, no. That's the thing, is you need to know the rules of your local casino, you know, or a card room or a charity house or whatever this was. So, yeah. I mean, he's right, though. I mean, in tournaments, that's exactly what it is. So it's hard to imagine that it would be different for cash, but it could be.
I think so.
It could be, yeah. But it's hard
but
to imagine.
But you never know.
Yep.
All right, Rich, you've got some stuff recently, but everybody else, send us your Recall the Four questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll be happy to send you something great like a deck of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of Antiup. You can pick up your own decks in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
Now, normally, of the two of us, someone misspeaks. It's usually you.
Isn't that far.
Usually it's you. You've already said .com today on the show.
Yeah, we can split hairs. I mean, 90% of the time, some people would say that's usually. I wouldn't.
Well, apparently I've screwed something up here, and I have a good reason for it, but we'll
you always do.
I always do. But Scott from Michigan, here's your chance to get back at me.
During the discussion of Chris talking about Michael Phelps in the Olympics, I'm quite a bit disappointed in you, Scott, for not calling out Chris for calling Michael Phelps or referring to him as the greatest Olympiad. Clearly, the word is Olympian, not Olympiad. An Olympian is a participant. An Olympiad is the event. And Chris must have said it 10 times, and it was driving me crazy because that's just how I am. Anyway, I had to vent. Thanks. Later.
So, yeah, I think he's just bitter. Because I gave him that guff before when he called in. But he's right. You know, what I was going to say was the reason why I had said it was the last thing that I had seen about this was someone on TV, on NBC, talking about it and saying they were saying Olympiad. And they were wrong, too. But that's not an excuse because obviously I know what an Olympiad is. I know what an Olympian is. And I just, for some reason, was getting all hot and bothered last week. And yes, yes, not Olympiad. Olympiad is a space of time between Olympics or whatever. I know it's the actual Olympics time. I know, whatever. And yes, I'm wrong. Thank you, Scott, for keeping me in line. I appreciate it. And it will never happen again.
Good luck with that. But you know what I love about when we get these calls, and this is the second week in a row that we had to use the feedback to kind of correct something, is that people are actually listening to us.
Yes, yes.
So we got that going for us.
And we're on the level, too. We don't just ignore it. We don't just say, ah, screw it. You know,
well,
make a mistake,
just
we say.
People are listening. You know.
Well, you know what, though? It's like the same five guys. So we could have like 7 listeners and we don't even know it. You know? It's like Bloomberg, Scott from Michigan, Button Girl. That's about it.
All right, a little bit of housekeeping here. Just a reminder that Lee Childs is offering Antiup fans a chance to attend his September 4th Inside the Minds training class at the Borgata Atlantic City, New Jersey for free. All you have to do is to enter is to tweet the following: I want to get at Inside the Minds at Borgata Poker, hashtag Antiup. You can tweet that once a day from now until August 30th, and he'll announce the winner via Twitter on September 1st.
Very cool. We're also looking for new ambassadors in Central California and Deadwood. You can apply at antiupmagazine.com/ambassadors. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Scott, we've passed 2,000 followers on Twitter this week. And something really cool, as I attested to earlier in the show, I was watching poker this week. And the precise moment that we reached 2,000 followers, Poker Geek's brother was on the featured table wearing our Antiup patch.
Awesome.
Isn't that cool? I mean, it was so cool to see him and see him wearing our patch. He had this Grateful Dead shirt on, and he never played a hand either, by the way. I think he folded every single hand for the whole time that he was on TV.
Yeah, I think Geek is a little he's still got a little bit of that bitterness going on. We're talking
sure.
about his brother being better than him, because on the forum he's like, hey, everybody watch now, my brother's on ESPN folding every single hand.
Yeah, you know.
I want to be there for that family reunion, that Thanksgiving dinner. I would love to see those two go at it.
But it was really cool to reach 2,000 followers, so please continue to follow us and retweet our stuff. We'd like to keep building that. And then, Scott seems to think that his Facebook 1,752 likes is pretty something important, too. So, you know, if you could help him out a little bit, that'd be cool, too.
Better than 1,751.
But, no, I think it's starting to grow. We're starting to get there. I think, you know, more people following us and liking us, and just keep it up. Appreciate it. Okay, let's see what's going on. Our Andy Up News Desk.
Federal Judge Jack Weinstein this week overturned the conviction of a New York man who was convicted in July. Wow, that's a lot of convictions.
And convictions, too.
Who wrote this stuff?
Did we put him in a convection oven? Is that what happened?
Overturned the conviction of a New York man who was convicted in July of running a poker room in a warehouse. Quote, the most skillful professionals earn the same celestial salaries as professional ball players, end quote. Weinstein wrote in his 120-page ruling, saying that poker is a game of skill and therefore doesn't come under the federal law against running an illegal gaming business.
Hey, you want another shot at reading that? Jeez. Oh, my God.
All right, so let me summarize this. There's the federal judge, who we love. Awesome dude. There's this guy that was running a poker game in a warehouse. Got pinched by the popo.
Popo.
Got convicted. And on appeal, this really cool federal judge said, whoa, hey, poker's a game of skill. It's not gambling. And I'm going to throw out your conviction, and I'm going to write 120 pages on why poker is a game of skill. How's that?
Very good, very good. Maybe we should just say it that way from now on. Let's just do it that way. You know, just because he's a federal judge, it doesn't necessarily mean as much as we hope it means, but it's a good thing.
Oh, it's never a bad thing.
Never a bad thing when someone's in that kind of position and saying that and making those kind of rulings. So that's always good for us. But, you know, it's not going to change anything. It's not changing anything, right? And that's the way that people
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it might change some enforcement in on the federal level, I guess, if they know that, because now any good lawyers can be able to use this judge's ruling in a case.
Yeah,
so.
Point to it, yeah. Yep.
But baby steps. We're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there. Okay, Facebook has begun allowing its users in the United Kingdom to play bingo on the social networking site for real money, and is expected to soon follow the online with online slot machines. So, the funny thing is, I could have sworn that they had already said they were doing this, but whatever. Okay, so ultimately, you can see that poker is going to be part of this too, right? I mean, there's just no way that
I would think so. Yeah, and when the most interesting thing part of that story that was in the Business Insider was. They mentioned how the UK is much more relaxed in their opposition to online gaming, which, of course, is not the interesting part because we all know that. But
Right. Just
kind of shows that a very progressive country, very non-progressive country over here in the States when it comes to personal freedoms.
And they got a lot of those book houses, too, right? They have all those places where they gamble just right on the street. You know, come on in and book some gambling place. That's pretty cool to me. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. I love societies that let me have freedom.
So. Yeah.
All right, and finally, Trishelle Canatella of The Real World and Amanda Kimmel of Survivor are traveling the world and having their poker exploits chronicled on camera for a reality show called Living the Life, even though the show doesn't yet have a network.
Hey, did you hear that Lisa Welchel is going to be on Survivor this year?
Yes,
Blair from the Facts of Life? It's not the Living the Life, it's Facts of Life, but...
that's true. It's a life.
Yeah, it's a life, some sort of life. So that's going to be interesting. I'm glad to watch that this year.
We'll see where this Living the Life goes. I got to say, Amanda Kimmel has been my Survivor crush forever. She's been on the show twice. I don't know whether...
I don't even remember.
She doesn't
who
anything
that is.
For you. She probably doesn't because we have wildly different tastes in women.
But, I don't remember who that is. Does she play poker?
No. In fact, actually, the story said obviously we know Trishelle does. She's played. I don't know. She's not. I wouldn't say great, but she actually plays. But Amanda's just brand new to the game. So.
Oh, okay. I was going to say because it's like their poker exploits. So she's just learning. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. All right. Very cool. All right. We got a brand new O'Malley's move coming out of the oven.
And welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a 1-2 no-limit hold'em cash game. It's nine-handed. The blinds post, and we're under the gun with two jacks, hearts, and clubs. The table standard raise is to $12. We've got $375 behind, down a bit, but not bad. We go ahead and bet the $12. The plus one and plus two fold. The MP1 calls, leaving him about $390 behind. The MP2 and cutoff fold. The button calls with about $600 behind, and the blinds get out of the way. The button is a pretty good player who might be a bit on the loose side. He loves to chase draws all the way down and slow play his big hands, coming alive on the river. The pot is $34, max rake taken, and the flop comes jack of spades, 10 of spades, 9 of spades. Gulp. Well, here's an interesting flop. We got top set, but it's an extremely wet board, both with flush and straight flush possibilities. But the odds of our opponents flopping a flush is unlikely. With $34 in the pot, we make it $25 to go. The MP insta-calls, but the button thinks for a while before calling, almost like he was pondering a raise. The pot is at $109, and the turn is the meaningless 4 of diamonds. A welcome sight, unless we're already beat. We decide to lead at this pot again. We bet $75 into the $109 pot. The MP now insta-mucks, but the button raises us all in. If we're beat, we've got to have outs, right? With one card to come, are we ahead? What do we do?
All right, a couple days, we'll be aboard the second biggest Antioch poker cruise ever, 221 guests, and we'll regale you with tales from the seas on next week's show, as always. For this week, we're excited to announce our 2013 cruise schedule, which has a record 4 voyages. Count them, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I love it. You call it a record, like it's some sort of stat that we've been keeping.
Hey, it is a record, is it not?
Notify Guinness.
Jeez, that is record. An accurate statement. There's no correction on next week's feedback section coming because I said it's a record for voyages.
All right.
But we get some new departure points next year, new ports of call, new ships, and some new fun. Plus, we still have one more cruise left this year, so you have 5 wonderful sailings to choose from. Very 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Very cool. Okay, so now we everybody knows about our cruises, but sometimes
if everybody did,
who listens, I think everybody listens.
Yeah, more
to
than 221 guests.
But we could have some new listeners this week or next week or whatever. So, you know, we want to let them know that what exactly happens on an Antioch poker cruise. You know, we take their conference centers, and it's a regular Royal Caribbean cruise that's going, whether we were there or not. But we take their conference centers over and turning them into floating poker rooms, as Scott likes to call
them. You make it sound like we're Navy SEALs and we storm the ship.
And they're regular rooms with real tables and real professional equipment and staff. None of that, you know, use your plastic card to press the screen and none of that crap. This is a real poker room with real stuff, real good quality equipment. We do have cash games and sit-and-goes are offered whenever the room is open. We have some scheduled multi-table tournaments. They run on sea days usually. And each cruise has at least 2 free poker courses taught by both of us and then sometimes by a pro. Sometimes the pro's one is so good that I go to them. and this time it's going to be our good friend and columnist Mike Wolf on our current one, but we'll tell you about the rest of them next year. And they'll also offer some of those classes for a fee, the advanced ones, afterwards. So everything you could want from your teaching experience. And then we always kick everything off with an open bar cocktail party where Scott can bore you to death with the details of the week. You can drink, so it makes it less annoying. And of course, we always have fun playing cards. And what's going to happen in 2013?
Yeah, well, one thing I'm excited about is we were forging a closer relationship with Royal Caribbean's onboard casino. You know, we're separate. We do our own poker in the conference center. They do their own slots and craps and roulette and blackjack in their casino. We do work a little bit together, but there hasn't been really any cross promotion at all. But in 2013, we're going to change that. The Ship Casino is going to offer a private blackjack and a private slot tournament for Antioch players and all the cruises. And so that's going to be kind of exciting, and we'll be continuing to look for some other import sponsors also for folks that like to play something other than poker. And of course, I'll remind everybody that much more information on the cruises can be found at antiapmagazine.com/cruise. Of course, if you're very quick today, you might get there before I get the stuff uploaded, but I'm going to try to get it uploaded before you get there. It's not there. Come back to antiapmagazine.com/cruise.
I'll take my time putting up the
sure
show.
You know. So. You have it posted here by 12:20, I'm sure. And of course, when you get to that website, we also have a very exhaustive cruise guide. If you've never cruised before, or you've never been on a poker cruise before, lots of questions and answers are on the cruise guide, so check that out. That might help you out. And then when you decide you want to come, give me a call at 727-331-4335. And I'll get you booked. And we always like to remind folks that Royal Caribbean policy insists that you book through Antiup in order to play in the Antiup poker room. We're not allowed to go up to deck 14 with the sandwich board and bells and
sandwich
drag people in.
Of course, you all know that November 10th, we're going out of Baltimore. And they're going to stop right here in Florida at Port Canaveral and then head on to Coco Cay in the Bahamas and Nassau aboard the Enchantment of the Seas. That's a nice seven-nighter. And Lee Childs will be back on the ship. He'll be our onboard pro. And Scott and his wife will be there. I won't be there, but they'll be joined by Poker Geek MN and Thietza, two of our longtime listeners, friends, and past cruisers as well. So you know that it's a good thing when they come back on. It means they had a good time the first time around. Book it by Labor Day, though. Rates are $5.99 per person, but only until then. After that, way higher. Scott says here that the cheapest staterooms on Royal Caribbean are $825 per person for that cruise if you don't book by Labor Day. So get it while it's hot.
Yeah, it's actually amazing how quickly this ship is filling up. So we only have rooms in our control through Labor Day. And right now, you're saving $225 per person, even if you're not a poker player.
Yeah.
You're better off booking through West right now.
Yeah, that's almost $500 if you're bringing somebody, so that's huge.
Absolutely. All right, then 2013, our first cruise will be February 4th. Same ship and same itinerary, same port, same bat, everything as next week. We're leaving out of Port Canaveral, Florida on the Monarch of the Seas, stopping at Coco Cay, Bahamas, and Nassau, Bahamas, four nights. And keeping the rate the same, starting at $369 per person. And a little wistful, Chris.
Yeah.
Be our final sailing on the Monarch of the Seas, which Royal Caribbean is retiring a couple months after our cruise. But it's hosted our biggest crowds, always our biggest crowds are on this ship.
Yep.
And, of course, it's probably also our least expensive sailing. I don't think those two things are connected at all.
It's weird, though, because this one we're going on this week was supposed to be our last one, and then at the last minute we're like, you know what, we can squeeze another one in and try to get people on and have more fun with us and one more chance. And so here you go, one last chance. It's like, whoa, like nice little surprise, but sad moment, too.
All right, then May 20th, our first time ever sailing out of May, we're going to be leaving, first time ever out of Miami. We're going to do a four-nighter on the Majesty of the Seas. That's the Monarch's sister ship, first time we've been on that ship. That's one also going to Coco Cay in Nassau, Bahamas, but also going to Key West, our first time going to Key West. A lot of fun there. You know, last time the wife and I were on a cruise ship to stop in Key West, we got off, and I know this is going to be shocking to our listeners, but what we did was we went from bar to bar. We each split a slice of key lime pie and had a beer. And we went to like 8 bars.
Yeah.
And of course, missed dinner that night.
Yeah. When I was in Key West, that's all you could do was go from bar to bar and look at the guys drawing chalk drawings on the ground. That was about all you could do. But it's cool. The sunset is the best part. I don't know if you'll be able to see the sunset when we get off or not, but they always, down to Mallory Square, they applaud the sunset and everything, and it's always kind of cool. But Key West is fun. A lot of fun things. It's like Mardi Gras South, you know.
Yes.
It's pretty awesome, so.
And it's as close to Cuba as you can get.
Yeah.
Sarah Palin can even see it from Key West.
Yep. You see that big red, black, yellow marker that says you're 90 miles from Cuba. Okay, October 20th, my wife's birthday.
Oh, hold on. I forgot to finish up. The rates on that Miami cruise are $4.99. Started at $4.99.
$4.29. There you go. We just saved you $70 just like that.
Took $70 off. $429 per person, and obviously we get the 3 port stops in 4 nights, so you're going to have a lot of time off the ship. So this is probably a good cruise if you want to try out your sea legs.
Yeah.
A little bit. We got some folks that still think they're going to get seasick, even though all the technological advancements on ships now. But do this one. We are in port probably more than we're sailing on this particular one.
Yeah.
And that means we're going to be playing a lot of night owl poker. So if you like to sleep in, play late, and don't really like to see, May 20th is when you want to go.
October 20th, we're departing the New York City area. It's actually Bayonne, New Jersey. The port is King's Wharf, Bermuda, where we're going to, and the ship is Explorer of the Seas. 7 nights, starting at $6.99 per person. This is our first time going. This is the longest you're going to have to drive the truck, buddy.
Yeah,
and it's the first time going to Bermuda too.
Very excited about Bermuda. We tried to do that for the November cruise this year, and we just couldn't get it to work, so we did the Bahamas instead. But very excited to go to Bermuda.
And also one of the cool things is that the ship's going to dock in Bermuda overnight for 2 nights, so you really get to experience Bermuda, and it's the largest conference center we'll have in the year, so there'll be plenty of room for poker, and I'm pretty sure we can play poker while it's docked, is that right?
We're waiting to hear on that. Yeah. They're trying to negotiate with the government right now, so it might be a tremendous amount of play time, but if not, I think it's kind of cool that the ship's going to be there overnight. We've never had an overnight port stop
ever
before, so you can get off, enjoy Bermuda day or night, and come back on, get your free meals.
Free feels?
Free. Oh my gosh. Your free meals! And a place to stay, and then you can still hang out in Bermuda. So I'm looking forward to that one more than any other cruise.
I think the percentage has clicked up to 95% of the time now that you screw up something. December 2nd is our last cruise of the year, and right out of our home port here, Tampa, which we love because we could just literally walk there if we wanted to. We're going to be going to Cozumel, Mexico, and Georgetown, Grand Cayman, on the Brilliance of the Seas. It's a 5-nighter starting at $4.59 per person. And, of course, it's our first time on the Brilliance, which will have a complete renovation by the time we sail, with a number of Oasis-class features added, including an outdoor movie screen and chef's table specialty restaurant. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, what I really like about Royal Caribbean, other than the fact that they just treat us very well, is they're all innovative in their ships. Of course, the Oasis and the Allure, the world's biggest cruise ships, and everybody always sees those on TV because that's what they push. A little too expensive for our Andia Poker cruises, so we don't take them. But now it doesn't really matter so much because they're taking all the cool stuff they do on that, and they're retrofitting all their existing ships. And we're lucky enough to be on the Brilliance when we do it. So, the wife and I went on the Allure once, and it was just actually jaw-dropping, some of the cool stuff on there. So,
yeah.
Looking forward to seeing that stuff on the ships that we do. But since we obviously offer poker in addition to everything else that's cool on a cruise ship. So one last time, visit antiupmagazine.com/cruise for all the information on this. Give me a call at 727-331-4335 when you're ready to book. And next week, we'll dedicate the show to all the fun that we had on the cruise coming up next week.
Very good.
This is Doyle Brunson, and you're listening to Antia.
Our little Omaha theme this week, Chris, with our hand of the week is... pot limit, PLO.
All right.
So, Button Girl, pay attention out there. I'm not sure whether they have any underfolds in this hand, but that would be great if you did. But it comes from David Kopp, and he says, I usually play crappy no limit hold'em. The last time I went to the local casino, all the tables were full, so I decided to sit down at a 1-2 PLO 8 game.
Hmm.
The bastard game.
Hmm. Hate that game.
I was talking to a poker manager on this last trip that said the same thing. And, I don't necessarily disagree, but I used to love PLO 8 online. Okay, poker star. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's just not... It's just something wrong about splitting a pot limit game.
Some of these purists like Gambit, and the poker room manager and you hate it, so... But hey, it doesn't matter. David likes it. He's playing it right now.
Okay.
Wait for his crappy no limit home table to open up. he says he sat down with $220 and over the next hour had worked it up to squiggly $300.
Hmm.
In the small blind, I get king of spades, queen of spades, ten of clubs, eight of clubs, And we have three callers ahead of us.
Okay. I like this hand. I don't know if I'm going to pot it or anything. I think I'll just call with it. There's no nut draws here unless you're very fortunate to see an ace of spades, two other spades with it. So,
well, you got some straight flush possibilities.
Yeah, you got some straight flush going on that, but yeah, I'm not. There are double suited cards and whatever. So, I like seeing a call here and seeing what happens. I'm not going to get too invested.
No, yeah, definitely don't want to get frisky with this, but this is definitely a hand I like to see at a discount. So, if it's just been limped around, throw my extra buck in and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right, that's exactly what our hero does. But the big blind makes it $10 to go.
Hmm.
We have one player folds, and it gets back to us.
Oh, sorry, one player
folds. The other player's called. Yeah, one of the three callers folded. Two of them made the call.
Okay. All right, well, now we got a call because it's just too much money out there to not call for that for $8 more. So I guess I'll call with it. Just be real cautious.
We close the action off here, too. So
yeah,
about a bigger raise. We don't want to get too invested here, but for an extra, $8 here.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine.
We'll see what happens, and hope we get a good flop, right?
Yep.
All right, so the flop comes down Queen of Diamonds, Jack of Diamonds, Nine of Clubs.
Very nice.
So we got a straight there.
Yeah, we got the nut straight.
And the top pair, which is, fool's gold.
Well, we don't need the pair. Backdoor stuff would be good, but we don't need that. We've already got the straight. So, but there is some concern. There are diamonds there. And, Okay, well, I think that it depends on how experienced this big blind player is that I can decipher. Because if he's not that experiened, then he might have just been raising with two aces. And, you might want to check to him and see what he does, but most of the time, with that many people in a pot, I'm going to bet here with the nuts because I can't afford to not bet. I think so. I'm going to bet.
Yeah, we don't really have a redraw here other than runner clubs.
Yeah,
actually runner straight flush, which would be nice, but
yeah,
I don't like to get too invested in a pot when I don't have redraws. It'd be nice to have diamonds in our hand, which we don't, but we got the nuts straight right now. And I'm going to make it expensive for folks to see it, and until the point where the board gets scarier.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember reading a chapter. It might have been Annie Duke's book, believe it or not, that said something to the effect of there were, if she gets some serious heat with the nut straight, and there are two to a suit, sometimes she folds it. I'm pretty sure that's what she said, because all you can do is hope to win half the pot, and somebody's probably free-rolling against you. That's what she wrote. So, yeah, I'm not going to get too heavily invested, but I'm going to bet this now while I can, and then if I get a lot of heat, then I'll reassess, but I'm not going to check it.
Yeah, because the problem is we got two more streets, and it's pot limits, so these pots usually get pretty big because, people get excited about pot.
Yeah.
Got to bet pot.
Yeah.
And you don't have redraws, it gets really dangerous to try to wait this thing out. But I would love to get heads up with a guy. Maybe he does have aces, and that's fine, depending what else he has. All right, our hero says, I love the flop, but check to see what happens.
Well, see, I don't like that check. I mean, I guess if someone bets, then you could, come back over the top. But now you're bloating a pot that's exactly. Very draw-heavy.
I would rather set the price right now.
Yeah.
And have folks call rather than check raise and make the pot even bigger, because then what's going to happen is if you get a blank on the turn, you're going to have to bet pretty big there.
Yep.
And then fade one more card. So I kind of like pot control here. You obviously want to get the folks out that the pretenders try to price out the draws, but I don't want to bloat this pot either.
Sure. I mean, somebody could have king 10 of diamonds. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Free rolling against you. So you really don't want the spot to get too big. You want to try to control it. But I guess if we bet and somebody raises us, then we'd have to think about it. But I think I'm still going to look for pot control here. I don't like the check, though.
All right. Well, the big blind bets $20. The other two players fold, and we're heads up now. It gets back to us. I think we already decided. We're just gonna. Oh no, actually no. He checked, right? Yep. So we got an option.
Yeah, I guess we could raise here, thinking that the big blind has his aces, but I'm real concerned. He could have He could have a suited ace of diamonds with aces, and you know, who knows. God, I think I'll call, and then I'll see what happens on the turn. If a blank comes on the turn, then maybe we'll figure it out from there. But you know, like I said, this pot's going to get pretty huge if this guy keeps betting and he's got a piece of this. So I'm trying to control it. So I guess I'll just call.
Yeah, it's real tricky because we're out of position again, which is absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
In this game, which is part of the reason you probably fold a big blind normally, but we wanted to flop big and we did flop the nuts. So you can't flop any better than that.
Yeah.
All right. So our hero decides to just call, figuring if I like the turn, I would make a move. Since the big blind has squiggly 500, so has us covered.
Oof.
The turn was the four of spades, so our board now is queen of diamonds, jack of diamonds, nine of clubs, four of spades. Shouldn't change anything.
Hmm.
And we are first to act, of course.
Well, since he took the line of checking, it could look like we were drawing. So I may check, thinking he'll bet again, because he'll think the four of spades didn't help me and would fire again. So I think I might check again, let him fire, and then depending on how much he bets, if he does bet, decide if I want to call or check raise and get it over with. I don't know. But because we checked, I feel like maybe another check is in order here, and then this guy might fire it. And then we can say, all right, well, we had the nut straight, so with only one card to come, let's pop it again. So I'm going to check, open the check raise, and if the free card comes, then it's probably a mistake. I know, I think it was, oh my God, Clay Aiken, Phil Galfond.
Yeah.
He talked about in Pot Limit Omaha, the hand doesn't even get started until the turn. That's when the real moves are being made and the real money's being made. So, I don't know. Maybe we should bet out. I don't know. I just feel like the way it's going, this other player is going to keep betting. So, I would check raise him, I think. I think on the turn, I would check raise. So,
well, what's interesting about the situation now is there's 215 in the pot. We started the hand with squiggly 300. And we've put, 30 in it now. So, we're at 270. So, you know, I would like to have some pot control here. I would probably check again because I'm out of position, and maybe I'm not playing this right, but I like to be cautious when I'm out of position in PLO. We got a guy that's raised pre-flop who bet out again on the flop. You know, if we don't bet here, then we have some pot control and we can decide what we're going to do. Obviously, if a blank comes on the river, that's great, and we'll be able to, at that point, we'll be able to get it all in and see if we need to.
All right, so let me try to...
But right now, I'd let him, like, to try to set the price here for me.
How much is in the pot again? Because let me see.
215.
There's 215 in the pot? Wait, we bet 20. He bet 20 and we call. That's 40.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped ahead.
Oh, okay, so what...
Yeah, so there's 40 pre-flop, and then
40 again. So there's only like 80 in the pot, right?
80 in the pot. Yes, sorry.
Okay, so 80 in the pot. If I'm gonna bet, I'm probably gonna bet pot. I mean, how could I not bet pot with the nuts and trying to stop this guy from drawing if he is drawing, or trying to get the most out of him because he's overvaluing his hand? So, I think I would bet pot if I did bet.
Absolutely.
Just because I know we're talking about controlling the pot, but with one card to come and I've got the nuts still, I probably should bet now and see what this guy really has. And if he shoves on me, I mean, I have to think about it. You know, he could have the same hand plus a redraw, but you know, you got the nuts, you know, what are you gonna do? So I don't know. If I'm gonna bet, I'm gonna bet 80, but if I think he's gonna bet, I'll check raise him as much as I can.
Okay, our hero said, looks good, but I felt that our opponent would bet, so I checked to him so I could check raise.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a solid plan to me. If this guy, because the way you've played it, it looks like you're drawing, and so you checked once and you check again, and he bet the last time he checked, so it looks like he might bet again. If he checks behind, then you're like, all right, well, you know, I gave him a free card to make his draw if he hits it, if there is a draw.
Yeah, I think this is a situation where I'm not really too worried about the free card. I mean, obviously, I don't want the card to get there that beats me, but I mean, checking here gives us the option, as we said, to check raise, which I think is solid here, because now we can come alive, and if he doesn't have anything, we've squeezed a little money out of him. If we bet out here and he doesn't have anything, he's probably going to go away, right?
Yeah.
So let him take another stab at it, and then we check raise him and at least pick up that money. And if he checks behind, he gets a free card. But again, we're out of position, so we're controlling the pot a little bit, so we're not losing as much. I mean, obviously, I don't want to lose the hand that way, but I think all considered, our best option here is the check raise.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good, because you've got the nut still after the fourth card, and with one card to come, this is a good time to put the hammer down. So if you knew he was going to bet, I would check raise. If you didn't, I would have bet pot.
All right, so we do check to him. He bets $50. And here it says I want to get him off the draw as an underhand, so I bet pot, which is 215.
Oh, that's the 215 number you're talking about. Yeah. Okay, so he bet. So that pretty much puts us all in, right? Because we only had about 300.
Yeah, we're pretty much essentially pot committed here. Yeah. And the big blind immediately goes all in as well, too.
Oh, okay. So something like he has the same hand as us. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not folding if there's.
At this point, yeah, we've got all of our money in, so. Almost all of our money, so, I mean, you're not going to fold the nuts.
No.
For a couple extra bucks.
No, with one card to come.
Yeah. Unless the rent's due tomorrow. all right, so our hero says they figure he must have the king 10-2. I called my last 75 bucks or so. He turns over ace of diamonds, king of clubs, queen of hearts, 10 of diamonds.
Don't do it.
He said, I expected king 10, but I didn't expect him to be free-rolling to any diamond, king, or 10. The river is a diamond, and he scoops the pot. How should I play this hand? I think I was still stuck in no-limit hold'em mode.
I mean, I can't really fault the way he played this. I mean, other than to get out of the hand pre-flop, but really, you're going to do that with two double-suited cards that are all connected, the straight flushes, too? I mean, I don't think I would have gotten away from this hand. And then after the flop, you're stuck. And like I said, the only other thing he could have maybe done was bet out instead of check raising the turn. But it doesn't mean he's not going to raise you. He has the nuts with all kinds of redraws to better hands. So he probably would raise you again anyway, and then you'd be stuck getting all your money in anyhow. I don't know how you would have played it differently, to be honest, other than folding pre-flop.
No, it's a good lesson in the perils of playing Omaha with no redraws.
Yeah.
But this particular situation, you're right. Again, the only thing is we could have saved our buck pre-flop. But with those card combinations there, I mean, I'm willing to take the dollar to see if I flop big. And we did. We flopped the nuts. So, I mean, obviously it would have been nice to have clubs or spades or redraws there. But at that point, you know, you want to try to control it. We controlled it on the flop a little bit. And then the turn, we got a blank. And at that point, we didn't have any reason to believe necessarily that he had the same hand as free-rolling on us. He couldn't have a better hand based on what it is. So, you know, we got the money in and just got unlucky that he was free-rolling.
That's brutal. It's a tough game to play, and that's why the pots can blow, you know, so high. And it's just, and of course, no low got there to split the pot with anyone. You know what I mean? You didn't have any low cards, so.
Right, yeah.
It's a tough game.
And that's a good point, too. I mean, that's another reason I like to play that hand in PLO8, because it's all high cards. You know, for an extra dollar, you know, you might be able to extract some value from folks that have low draws. Yeah. When low draws don't get there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it turns out that wasn't an issue in this hand because it was all high cards on the flop. But
the other thing, too, is there is a case we made for folding just because the cardinal rule in split pot games is to try to scoop both. And you, not that it turned out to be a factor here, but if you're thinking, I should only play in hands I can scoop, right?
So, but again, it's a dollar, so.
No, I know, but it wasn't after that. Then it was 8.
Flop like that, right.
Then it was 8. So after that, then you're like.
No low possibility on that flop. It was all three high cards, so.
But it was pre-flop 8 more. Remember, he raised when I got to the blind. So that's what I'm saying. So if you look back at your hand, you're like, okay, I can't even win the low if a low gets there. This guy's raising. He probably has ace, deuce, ace, king, or something like that. Now, if a low gets there, I'm already playing for half the pot. Should I play this hand or not? So I guess there's a case where you could have folded pre-flop after that raise. But really, it's kind of a juicy hand and just got you into trouble. That's all.
All right, David, we've recently sent you something, so nothing for you today. But everybody else, remember to email us your hands of the week to podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something great something maybe like a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at antiupstore.com.
Here's hoping Hurricane Ike misses everybody and we come back safe and sound with a brand new show next week. I'm Chris Crescenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
It's August 24th.
No. Whoa.
What are you doing?
You didn't clear your throat or anything, are you?
No, gonna... I know. I didn't... I'm ready to go. I've been sitting there for 15 minutes waiting for you.
You're not going to hack up a log on the show now, are you?
Well, I am recording this, so I don't know. Maybe I should just to make everybody happy.
All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.